Ron Ananian.
The car that everybody is drooling over, the hot rod of today, that new Z06, the Chrysler Hellcats, the Chargers, the Challengers, the Mustangs, if it's got electronics in it and the electronics break, you're probably not going to be able to fix it. You're probably not going to be able to get parts for it.
The Car Doctor.
I can tell you this. Absolutely, definitely. You ready?
Yep.
It's something between the bumpers.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
Hey, thanks for stopping by the garage today. Ron Ananian at your service at 855-560-9900. But you probably know that already because you've been listening to our wonderful announcer talk about it, as he has for these past many, many years. I'm grateful to have Karen working for us. Tom, you're there, sir. I want to introduce Tom Ray to the audience. He is my right hand, my right arm, and without Tom, I really wouldn't be able to do much of anything. I think he's
There you go, sir.
I just wanted to say hello to everybody. You know, everybody asks, who is this Tom Ray guy? And I say, well, he's kind of hard to describe. You know, we kind of keep him behind the scenes because he keeps the show moving along. How are we doing today? Everything looking on the up and up?
Things are good so far, as opposed to last week when we had a couple of glitches that we won't talk about.
that was the technical oopsies. So there was a message last week, and I wanted Tom to be here when I read this as we kick off this hour of the show. This came to us from Jerry, and Jerry kind of hit it on the head. Ron, last weekend's show was painful. I'm sorry you had to go through that. Diagnostics seem to be overlooked. Callers don't seem to value the cost of an accurate diagnosis. I've learned a lot from you. I have a scanner and can monitor fuel trim and freeze frame info. Thanks for the education and all you do. Comes to us from Jerry out of the 828 area code. And, you know, Tom and I talked about last week's show after the show, and we said, what the heck was going on? Because last week was the show of, we're not going to spend any money on diagnosis. We're just going to spend a lot of money on parts. And it doesn't work like that, right, Tom? I mean...
No. I mean, in your business, in my business, I'm an engineer. I fix broadcast equipment for a living. And boy, you can spend a lot of money throwing parts at things when it could be just that 25-cent thing.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Exactly so. I had we talked about it here. I had an O2 Silverado that everybody wanted to put a trans control module in, and it wasn't. The fuses, the power fuse for the trans control module, the pins were spread because somebody had put a power tap in at somewhere in the life of this 18-year-old vehicle, and it was causing an intermittent connection going out to the trans control module. It needed a fuse box. It needed a $54 fuse box instead of an $800 trans control module that was on intergalactic outer space back order. So, you know, diagnosis is really, you're doing yourself and your mechanic is doing you a disservice not applying a diagnosis to whatever you do. I think what I said last hour made the most sense, and I came up with that off the top of my head, where you walk into the doctor, my elbow hurts. Hey, we're going to amputate your arm. You know, what's sometimes not doing a diagnosis, working on a car, that's what you're doing. You're cutting yourself off at the shoulder because you're missing so much information that, and in the long run, you're costing yourself money. So, Tom, thanks. Let's kick the garage doors open. Let's go over to Tim in California with this 19 Rogue, and we'll get this hour started. Hey, Tim, welcome aboard. How can I help?
Hi. So I was wondering if you've ever heard of anybody trying to intervene on the early failure of a CVT transmission. I heard your comments about the Nissan never getting it together like the other manufacturers. And so I wanted to brainstorm on things we could do to make it last longer, like an external cooler, external filter, temperature monitoring, an auxiliary gauge to monitor the temperature.
The answer to the question is yes.
Is anybody doing that?
Yeah,
on CVTs?
Yeah, Tim, I'll tell you what. It's not the worst idea. As a matter of fact, Nissan has a lot of auxiliary coolers and add-on coolers for the Rogues, the Sentras, and some of their other cars because the heat... The way the CVT works and the way it generates heat, it's just death to that transmission. It's just not a great design overall. Now, if you're thinking of buying one, are you thinking of buying a CVT Nissan?
My business partner just bought one, and he's he will want it to have an adequate life. And
right.
so I told him I'd put a call into you and see what we could come up with, anything.
An external cooler isn't the worst idea. Now, do you happen to know, did he order it with the trailer tow package?
No, I don't think it has that. And it's a two-wheel drive option, you know, so it's pretty generic, I think. Yeah.
Because if it was the trailer tow package, Nissan actually puts an auxiliary trans cooler in the radiator for those. They realize the heat is going to be an issue. So adding a tow package or adding an auxiliary cooler to that is, I can't say it's a bad idea. I really think it'll help promote.
Okay.
I don't know it for a fact, but I know that heat is the number one message we get as far as why those transes fail, and they've been failing, 8, 9, 10 years now. They've been failing a very long time. Nissan hasn't been very successful at it, and by any means you can use to, monitor temperature and reduce temperature with a cooler, by all means, do it. By all means, absolutely.
Okay, great.
So,
thanks for weighing in on that.
No, you're very welcome, and we wish him success. Does he have the extended warranty on it?
He bought it as a Enterprise Rent-A-Car is selling off the fleet because people aren't traveling, and so he got it for $3,000 or $4,000 under Blue Book for a similar car under those circumstances, and so it is. It wasn't ordered in any particular way. He just acquired it as a low mileage used car.
So maybe he wants to look and see what sort of extended warranty does Nissan offer. Now, I would also ask Nissan, hey, and you've got to find a guy that's going to tell you the truth. You talk to a company man, as I like to think of him. Hey, you have any problems with this trans? And he's, no, they're perfect. They're great. You know what? Go talk to the technicians that are fixing them. For my money, the most honest guys in the dealership sometimes are the guys in the back telling you, hey, we'll tell you what's really breaking on the car. And, sometimes the best guy to talk to is the guy running the parts department. Hey, what are you ordering a lot of? We don't have any problems with these transmissions, but we order 7 a week. Well, that tells you something. And, that's not to be ignored. So I would definitely consider a cooler. I would definitely consider if he can add some sort of extended service contract on that. I would ask Nissan, because if that's a 5-year, 60,000-mile warranty on that trans, brother, I don't think it's going to get 70 on it. I just don't. I've just seen too many problems. So I would definitely consider the price of a contract. You were going to say.
Do you think they come out with any software updates? Because, the recently of last year, I think Ford Fusions that had been out for years, they finally admitted they didn't ship right and changed the shift points. And I wonder if that trend will follow with CVTs as it has with other transmissions.
I think they will if it's a proven problem in a large enough number. Automobile manufacturing is a fascinating thing. It really is. We look at the way they make cars, and we just think, unless you're doing it, I think we, as the motoring public, the guys that are buying the cars, we think on such a small scale. And, it's just such a limited thought process. We don't think about saving a quarter of a cent spread over a million cars, what that would cost. Gee, why don't they make this bolt a little longer? Well, it's a quarter of a cent spread over a million cars. It adds up. It's a real telling moment of how big car manufacturing is, in a sense. And it's sort of an abstract thought, but I noticed it. I was rewatching Ford versus Ferrari last night. Have you seen the movie?
Not yet.
Okay. Go watch Ford versus Ferrari. Great movie. A real telling tale of when cars were cars, right? And there's a scene there where Henry Ford is talking to Carroll Shelby, and he asks him to look out the office window on the 19th floor. And he's pointing towards the Willow Run manufacturing plant where the bombers were made during World War II. The car business was so dominant in this country at one point, they built an assembly plant to build bombers for the government. What kind of money does that take? How deep are your pockets that you can afford to pour that kind of concrete? And they showed the plant in the distance. And I kind of took it, my understanding is Ford owns all the land between the headquarters they were in and the place where they were looking, which was, 7 miles away. How do you own all that? How do you build something like that? And my point becomes, we look at car manufacturing and we say, why don't they come out with a software update for this? Why don't they come out and put an auxiliary cooler on this? Why don't they do it this way? Why don't they do it that way? Because they don't have to. It'll cost them money, and they haven't had their hands held to the fire yet. So to answer your question, you know, I think about that Ford versus Ferrari scenario of what will it take to make it work. When they have enough problems with the CVT, when the patents become pending or when the patents become due or when they're allowed to bypass and the bean counters say, okay, let's redesign this from the ground up, that's when the problem will get solved. But until somebody holds their feet to the fire, you know, car companies are going to continue to do what they do. Do you know why car companies make bad cars?
I got an idea.
Yeah, why? Why?
So you can trade it in every 3 or 4 years.
Well, yeah, I was going
to
say,
have mechanical bills.
They make bad cars because we keep buying them. So until we tell them no more, you know, somebody asked me once, I'll never forget this call. They called up on air. It's got to be 10 years ago. And they said, how come they don't make cars like slant six Chryslers anymore with a single one barrel that ran forever? I said, because nobody wants to buy those. Everybody wants the latest, greatest bells and whistles. You know, how complicated can we make it? How involved? What does it look like? You know, that kind of a thing. So. But anyway, that's the story. Tim, I appreciate the call. Good luck to your partner, and definitely put a cooler on it and see about an extended service contract, what the cost might be, and make sure it's good coverage and make sure it's a company, if it's not Nissan, a company that's going to be around with a good track record. You don't want to just buy any fly-by-night policy. Go back and talk to Enterprise. They might offer something, and then at least you've got the clout of a bigger company to work with as well, and that should do it for you. I appreciate it. Appreciate the call, Tim. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. I'll be back right after this. Don't go away.
It's the little old lady from Pasadena.
He drives that way, but when it comes to fixing cars, Ron has car advice done right. 855-560-9900. Here's Ron.
Well, I tell you what, I'd like to be that little old lady from Pasadena. She was driving that super stock Dodge. Those were the days. Nobody knows what super stock Dodge means anymore, probably. So anyway, let's get over to Frank, waiting there very patiently in New Mexico Way 13 Nissan. What's going on, Frank? How can I help you today?
Hey, Doc. Basically, I just had a little rant going on about, okay, I went out this morning and my wife's 2013 Nissan Sentra had a rear right flat tire. Okay, big deal. It's like 19,000 miles, never had a problem. Anyway, I pull out the mat and the sub-mat and the basic mat to expose the little donut down there and the alleged tire-changing kit. My rant is that the so-called tire iron is like a tire pencil now.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, Frank, I'm right there with you.
I'm not going to break these nuts loose. They're at 80 pounds from the factory. So I would advise everyone to carry around a nice 12-inch or 14-inch breaker bar with a 26-inch socket, 26-millimeter socket.
Right. Yep.
To break things loose.
It should be mandatory. You know what, Frank? We all think... You know, we all look at the outside and the car is shiny and it has all the bells and whistles and options. We don't think about the what if, the brake, the failure, the flat, the dead battery, we're not prepared for the emergency until there is one. And then all of a sudden it's an issue. And, you know, I'll tell you a quick story. So one of our daughters is a nurse at a local hospital, and somebody had a dead battery this week, and she's a good egg, as you can imagine. And, you know, she called me up. She says, hey, I'm going to hook up the jump pack you gave me, because I gave her a little jump pack she keeps in her pocketbook. It's a little small thing. It's not big, and it'll jumpstart a car. And, you know, she's got it in her pocketbook, so if she ever needs to charge her cell phone or jumpstart her own vehicle. And she called me up, and I walked her through. And this was a doctor she was helping, an educated person. And he was floored. He's like, wow, I've never seen that kind of technology before out of your pocketbook. And she said, yeah, you got to be prepared. My dad taught me to be a good scout. And, you know, we don't think like that. I don't know why anybody driving a car today hasn't gone out and, you know, it's cheap enough. Go buy a ratchet or, as you say, a breaker bar with a correct size socket for your lug nuts and keep it in the trunk of the car. Because the stuff they give you from the factory on a lot of vehicles, A, it's junk. B, it's real tough to get to. You know, there's not a lot of thought in every department of every aspect of a car company. And it only comes out when you need it the most, right? I know Tom Ray, my executive producer and screener, as always, Tom carries an impact wrench in his car, a portable cordless impact wrench. And yeah, that's not the worst idea either. Here, I'll tell you the stupidity of engineering. You know, we think we're counting on engineers to do the right thing for cars. We had a 2013, you ever put brakes on a 2013 Hyundai, Frank?
No, sir.
Okay. You're in for a treat if you ever have to do this. So the rear brakes, to take the rear brake calipers off. You think it's important to be able to take the brake pads and calipers off so you can get the rotor off when you're doing brakes, right? That would be like common sense that you could do that. The bottom bolt of a rear brake caliper on a 13 Hyundai, and it's there for, I think it probably like starts in 11 and it goes up to 14 or 15. That bottom bolt, you have to take off the suspension cross brace. All right, which is, you know, on an older car, it's a 13, it's 7 years old, it's nice and rusty and crunchy, it's been in New Jersey its entire life. The thing's a rolling tetanus shot, all right? Thank God, and I'm, you know, thank God for PB Blaster. I hit the one cross bolt for the lateral support bar because it's horizontal to the chassis of the car. And, oh, and that's the other thing. I sprayed some PB on it. Because the bolt comes in from the back of the vehicle, goes through the cross brace into the chassis. It's a captured nut on the other side, and the nut is exposed to the airstream. So imagine put a mounting bolt under the car in the back so all the road slush, slop, and crud gets thrown up on it for 7 years and 100,000 miles, and now you got to take that brace out to do rear brakes. You know, and an engineer designed that. Now, why can't he make the bolt go the other way? So the threads are behind the cross member, so they're protected from the environment, because they don't think like that. All right? There's a reason.
Hey, Doc, could I ask you a question here?
Yes, sir.
Should I? I got the tire off after the mini tools. Anyway, I got the tire plug in there. Got the hole reamed out. It was brand new. Never used wood screw that she somehow got in there in her travels.
Right.
So I got the plug in there. Should I just not even bother putting the thing on and trying it out, see how it works out, or should I just take it to the tire shop and have them do it from the inside out?
Have them do it from the inside.
Assuming they don't mess up the...
Yeah, where was the screw? Was the screw in the center of the tread, or is it more to the outside shoulder?
Exactly in the center.
Yeah, then no, it's worth the tire's worth. If the tire's only got 19,000 miles on it, and it's got, you know, like more than 430 seconds tread depth, it's worthwhile. It should go to a tire shop, have them take it from the inside out, and do a plug patch properly to make sure the tire is safe. Tire plugs, and again, it's an argument in the industry. At one point, they were supposed to be considered illegal. They're not. Not that I've seen any legislation on it, but they're frowned upon because they allow the belt to shift and saw through the plug in instances. You want a plug patch from the inside. That's the safe way to go. Do that, and you'll be fine. I appreciate the call, Frank. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We'll return right after this. Welcome back. We're on the Car Doctor at 855-560-9900. You know, I was trying to explain to Frank, and I don't know if you heard it, but during the course of doing those rear brakes on that Hyundai, that it takes some time, and that's the point I wanted to make, that because of the poor engineering on that car, like on so many cars, we see it today, you know, engineers are not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, or they're limited by a budget, or they're trying to make a number, or they're, you know, there's 100 reasons why parts or cars are made wrong with parts that we think or we experience as being inefficient. You know, long story short, letting it soak with a rust penetrant. We use PB Blaster in the shop. Nothing works like it. It's amazing stuff to watch. It actually starts to bubble and fizz as it gets down in the rust. But I don't think I would have gotten those bolts out of that bracket, out of that brace, to do the rear brakes without some PB on them, because the amount of rust that was there was incredible after 7 years. You would think that they would realize in the environment they're going to go in, just tough stuff. But, thank God for PB. I say it all day long. I keep telling Danny it's so good it should be illegal because it really works well. I'm afraid to talk about it too much. They'll figure out what a good product it is, and somebody won't let them make it anymore. So, stuff works well. Let's get on over and talk to John in Mississippi. 96 Chrysler New Yorker. Is John there? John's gone. Hey, look at that. We missed him. Just like that. How do you like that? Well, let me do this then. I want to pull over and do this. I was going to do this a little later on. We'll do it now. This comes to us from the folks at Mitchell Real Fix Sure Track Repair of the Week. This one talks about a whining Suburban. Replacing parts more than once is a real time waster for shops and frustrating for customers. And again, we're back to that thing about diagnosis, right? It sounds like somebody's not diagnosing something, and they're not doing what they need to do. This Sure Track community member had a Chevy Suburban in the shop that the alternator had been replaced, and now they had symptoms indicating it was a problem again, as well as a noise issue. They put their question out to the community, and the idea here is that the folks at Mitchell One have set up a community by which you can, well, kind of blog and talk about your individual problems with the other mechanics and see where we're thinking the issue might lie. Instead of just, you're on your own. You're not on your own, especially in a connected world. So this is a 2008 Chevy Suburban. There was a whining from the radio, pulsing headlights. They had done the alternator, and they'd put a speaker in it, and they still had the problem. So it went on for a couple of months. The alternator and the battery were replaced again. The alternator was warrantied. The headlights started pulsing all over again. And somebody wrote down that they agreed that it was a bad alternator, but they wanted to know what sort of testing had been done at the alternator. And they went through and did a series of different things, and they found out that they had to put a better quality alternator in it because the problem was there was too much AC ripple coming out of the alternator, which is in the diode cluster. There was an issue there, and it comes down to, I guess, good quality parts help make a car work that much better, right? It's only as good as the eggs and the flour that go into the cake mix to make that cake taste better. So, as always, more information like this available to everyone out there at MitchellOne.com. And you can become part of the Mitchell One community, and we thank them for posting things like that. I see John from Mississippi is back. Let's try and get over there before the break. John, welcome, sir. How can I help you and your 96 New Yorker?
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
One of my trunk hinge springs broke, so I got another one.
Okay.
And what it is, it's called a spiral torsion spring. It looks sort of like a hockey puck. It's basically twisted around itself, a flat.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. They do that on a lot of front hood hinges, too. It wraps onto itself as you open and close it. So,
here's the only problem is, how do you install it? I mean, me and a friend of mine tried, and we racked our brains trying to get this thing in there. See, you have to put tension on it to install it.
Right. So it may be, you always have to approach, and I can't say that I recall installing one recently, John, so let me come from that perspective at you, all right? But anytime I'm stuck with how do I install something, I always think if that car was coming down the assembly line, on average, they have 38 seconds to put the part on. So, how did they do it, right? How did they get it done so quick? It's you always got to think there's the boss is standing over you going faster, faster, get it in, make it work. So, when you're doing a spring on any hood, you always have to get the hinge in the unloaded position. So are you trying to install the hinge loaded because the trunk lid is up?
Well, yes. You can take most of the tension off the spring and get it easiest to install by lifting it as high as it'll go and holding it up with a rod. And then there's the loose end of the spring on the outside that hooks over one stud.
Right.
And there's another stud about 2 inches away with a slot cut into it. And the spring itself, there's a flat in the middle of the spring. That slides onto that stud. And once you get it on there, it's not going to come off by itself. I mean, there's tension on it at all times.
If you were to take that hinge off and laid it on a bench, does that change the opportunity or the angles by which you've got to work with and the amount of tension on the spring, or would it be the same thing?
Oh, that I haven't tried. I haven't tried taking it off the car. I was going to try to avoid that because alignment issues when you try to put it back on.
Right. You know, that would be my thought, because when they're putting it together on the line, they are undoubtedly installing the hinge and then the deck lid.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the only thing I would tell you to do before you go through the pain of taking the hinge off and, as you say, changing your alignment, changing, you know, your positioning of everything, and you could surely mark everything with a scribe or just, you know, make some witness marks as to what went where, is talk to a body shop. See what a body guy might have to say for input. All right? You know, just because, you know, it's they'll go through it more and more, but I've never seen a special tool. You know, we've done front hood hinges on GM products, and we end up usually taking the hinge off. We put it in a, we find the position where it's unloaded. We'll clamp it in a vise, put it in a position where it's unloaded, put the spring on, put it back to the loaded position, and then put it back on the vehicle. And then we've got to go through the alignment of the trunk, or the, I'm sorry, the hood. So it's probably going to be that, but just double check with a body shop before I put you through that unnecessarily. All right, sir?
All right. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Good luck to you, and keep us posted. Bye. Let us know how it works out. 855-560-9900. The Car Doctor's back right after this. Hey, let's go over to Virginia and talk to Rich with an 07 Prius. What's going on here? Hey, Rich, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Hi, Ron. Glad to have you on WNIS. I have a 2007 Prius, like you said, and my question is about the big battery, because I had some intermittent problems. I brought it to my mechanic, and the climate control button stopped working, and I figured, well, the summer's almost over, but then as winter's coming, I need to get at the climate. And he said that the unit I would have to buy would be $10,000 new, which is way too much, and then $450 used but no warranty. And then I realized, and they told me, you just use the display button over there. But since then, just a couple days later, the cruise control button stopped working, and I love that. I love the cruise control. And I think these are computer-related. One other thing that's been happening continuously is, and it's gotten less since they put in, they fixed it a little bit, but the driver's side window, and I push the button, sometimes it just doesn't do anything, and I wait a couple minutes, and then it works fine.
Okay.
So those are the issues that I have, Ron.
I know of nothing that's $10,000 in the air. $10,000?
It's a whole new, probably, computer system, I guess. It was, and he called, I guess, that's what they said, honest.
All right, I'll believe you.
And so another thing was, is there a way to redo the battery? It's an old car, so I'm also thinking, what should I do? You know, because I know those big batteries are real expensive.
Well, the big batteries,
control is related to it.
Is any of this, has he said any of this is related to the high-voltage battery?
Yeah, no, he did not say that. But he did say that since it's an old car, you might want to think about a trade-in or something because these batteries are expensive.
The batteries are expensive. Let's start there, okay? The batteries are expensive.
Yep.
They're in the $3,000-$4,000 range is the numbers I'm seeing. I haven't priced one in a while, but you know, there's some simple testing. You could go in with a scan tool and look at battery voltages. You can look at the battery voltages and it'll be in the battery system, not engine control. And they should all be very close to each other in a 15 volt scale. You have to check something called delta state of charge. The delta state of charge shows the charge of each battery cell, and they should be within 10% of each other. Now, this is a 14-year-old car with how many miles on it? 200,000?
Yeah, just under.
Yeah,
over 195, but less than 200. Yeah.
You know, you're right in the sweet spot of where batteries start to fail on these, and it's not unreasonable to expect, you know, the batteries not, you know, the batteries to become an issue. So, you know, if me telling you, we can make this easy, if me telling you that, yeah, batteries tend to go at this age and mileage, and you having to spend $3,000 on a battery plus install, if that's going to turn you off, conversation's over. You know, we're not going to worry about it. Try and sort out what your mechanic's talking about as far as, you know, what the rest of it's about. You know, it's still going to take some diagnosis to sort it out. You know, crews cannot work for problems within the crews to brake light switch to, you know, a myriad of other things. Now, the other point I was going to try and get to is what you're describing, a problem with the driver's window, you said, Rich?
Yes, sir.
Problem with the driver's window, the crews, and the air conditioning. Is there a common denominator? It's just strange. Did all this start to happen at once?
It started with the driver window, and then about a week ago, the climate.
Okay.
But then I brought it to the mechanic because of the climate, and they didn't, like I told you about the prices and everything, what happened. And then 2 days later, it was the cruise control.
He's been your mechanic. He's been your mechanic a long time, Rich?
They're good. It's a AAA, and I like them. Yeah.
Okay. You know, it just, I'd be looking for a common denominator. And, you know, I'd have to prove it to myself so I could prove it to the customer to say, hey, you know, because something here doesn't add up. Two and two is four. To have three separate systems, you know, to have three separate systems fail at random like this, I think we're going, you know, and two is four all the time until two and two makes five. And I think two and two is making five here. It's something doesn't add up. I'd be curious what fault codes are in this vehicle. It's got to have something. It's got to have some. I would be surprised if it did not. You know, at the very least.
Maybe I should bring it to a Toyota dealer then, because they don't have all the equipment a Toyota dealer has.
Well, you know, and I'm trying to find a nice way to tell you that I don't know that it has to go to a Toyota dealer, but you know, a shop that, you know, listen, we're all victim of human nature. Okay, and my experience has been anytime I've seen a mechanic wave his arms wildly in the air and I start hearing exotic, crazy numbers, he either can't or doesn't want to fix that car. You know, I hate to pin him down like that. You know, I don't want to put the doubt of seed in your mind, because maybe there's something here you're not telling me. He's not telling you. You know, maybe there's a miscommunication somewhere. But
if there is, it's my ignorance. That's all.
Well,
and I think it's, they don't have all the equipment about, you know, at the Toyota dealer house. So that might be my next step. Well,
yeah, I would.
Advice,
you know, and
yeah,
I wouldn't.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't rely solely on their certifications and their credentials. And you know, I've got my own opinions about what I think AAA repair is. AAA repair is like ASE certification and some of the other things that mechanics go through. It doesn't ensure or guarantee accuracy. It puts the odds in your favor, and that's all it does. It still comes down to the people in the uniforms that are in that repair shop that are working on that car as to whether or not that vehicle is being diagnosed properly. Go back and talk to them. Cup of coffee time. Hey, how'd you come to this conclusion?
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome,
it.
Sir. And then it's going to be off to the Toyota dealer, so we can kind of take it from there. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We'll be back right after this.
She's real fine, my 409. She's real fine, my 409, my 409. Well, I saved my
pennies. Welcome back,
and
Ron
Ananian,
the Car Doctor. Boy, where do the 2 hours go, right? 1 hour, 2 hours, it's just like the time flies by. Let's do 3 hours today, Tom. Let's be rebels, because now I'm just getting ready to go. I'm all fired up, and all this conversation about engineers and how do they design cars. And
oh,
you know,
shoot me now.
You know, it's like, let's go, Tom. I can do another hour. I know I got it in me. I'm looking at the Facebook page, Tom. Let's do a Facebook review. Bob writes in.
Okay.
He says, hey, Ron, what's wrong with engineers? I have an 07 Cadillac STS which needed a headlamp replacement. I spent 3 hours yesterday removing the front bumper cover to access the bulb. What are they thinking? Bob, you're giving them too much credit. You think they're thinking. An 07 Cadillac is 14 model years old, depending upon where you're living and what part of the world. You know, how much rust and how much crud and how much grit and junk got jammed up in that bumper cover, getting that bumper off. Whatever happened to the idea that a bulb is going to have to be a simple, easy-to-replace part? They don't think like that. And you've got to see it in a shop on some of the cars. There's a model Volkswagen Beetle out there. You've got to take the front fender off to do the headlight bulb. It's the dumbest thing in the world. And yet they produce these cars. And you know what? We're the dummies because we buy these cars and we allow them to be put out there on the road and we treat them like they're the Holy Grail. It's the dumbest thing in the world. You know what? I'm not sure why engineers do what they do. I'm not sure why car companies do what they do. I do know this, though, and I mean this in all sincerity. I look at the way people fix cars professionally and even some of the do-it-yourselfers. And I've got to tell you, I am so thrilled to be involved in an industry surrounded by some of the smartest people I know. You know, it's like someone once said to me years ago, you have to be so smart to be a mechanic. You're smart enough to go and do anything else you want in life. And I believe that to be absolutely true then as well as now. That's what it takes to fix cars. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, proud to be here and happy to serve, reminding you, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.